Hi, everybody. My name is Hank Johnson. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
And I'm from Palmdale, California, and I'm from Marina Del Rey, California. I'm from Torrance and Hermosa Beach and a lot of other places. I used to drink, so I moved quite a bit. I don't know. But it's good to be here in Boise. I had opportunity yesterday to walk around the town and see some of the things. It's really a nice, clean little city. And was interested this morning. I looked into the river, and it's actually water in the river. Now, that's unusual for a Los Angeles boy to see water in a river. So I drank for a long time. My first experience with alcohol, I guess, was when I was 13 or something, you know, behind the gym type drinking. But I hit the big time when I turned 18 years old. I went into a bar in Los Angeles, and you have to be 21 in California, and I passed for 21. I ordered a drink. They served me. Immediately, I became a man. That's what I wanted to be, a man, and a man can buy a drink over a bar without being asked how old he is. And I graduated right then and there, and from that time on, the focal point of my life was when I was going to get the next drink. I like to drink, and I just went back to that bar every opportunity I had from then on. From then on, I drank on a regular basis. I could play the jukebox over in the corner just as good as the rest of the guys. In fact, I thought my selection of songs were a little better than most. I could sit at the bar and look at myself in the mirror and get better looking after each drink. And I just liked it in that place. Sometimes you hear people say, came to AA, and I just felt so comfortable, I just felt like I came home. Now, not me. I didn't feel that way at all, but I sure felt that way in that bar. I knew that was the place for me, that I belonged there. And I went back every opportunity I had from then on. And I met my wife in a bar. Where else do you meet girls? And we got married, and started a turbulent marriage. I always thought, you know, we bought this little house, and I couldn't make the payments on the damn thing. I used my money to drink with. The payments would come due, and I said, well, I'll wait till next month and double up on the payments. Next month would come along, and my God, I couldn't come up with a payment. I'd stiff all the other creditors, and somehow I'd make the payment, get caught up, you know. We almost lost that house several times. We finally sold it and moved in with my father for free. If anybody would have asked me, Hank, what is your problem? I would have said, money. Money's my problem. You know, she don't go to work and help out a little bit. You know, I don't know how I got involved in this business. I mean, I don't pay enough. You know, money is my problem. Instead of going to work, it turned out she was pregnant. She already had a baby by a previous marriage, and now the number two is coming up, and I didn't start saving for that baby until about a week before it was due. I just couldn't come up with the money, so I went to the beneficial finance company and borrowed the money to pay for the hospital and medical expenses when my wife had the baby. And you know, when my son turned 25 years old, and I finally got sober in AA, I finally got beneficial paid off. I don't know about you people, but I always had a crisis in my life. I'd almost get those guys paid off and something would happen, and I'd have to go back and consolidate my bills again. You know, I'd total them all up, and I'd borrow that amount of money, and I was only going to have to make one payment. And somehow, I never figured right or whatever it was. They didn't give me enough. Besides, something would happen to part of that money on the way home, and I'd get home, and there wasn't enough money to pay all the bills. So then I'd have to go to the Pacific Finance Company and borrow the rest. Sometimes I had a bank loan going at the same time. I used to wonder at income tax time when you total up all your interest and everything. That's great to deduct all that from your income tax. You know. But I used to wonder, what the hell am I buying? What is it that I'm purchasing? I'm making all these payments. You know? I wasn't buying anything. I was just making payments, that's all. And it turned out, after I got sober for a couple of years, I finally figured it out. what happened to me is I financed about 25 or 30 years of drinking. Every time I took a drink, I paid an extra 15, 20 cents in interest to beneficial finance. I don't have to do that anymore, thank God. And so my drunkologue is really very boring. I used to just sit around and drink. I mean, I'm sure everybody out there in this audience has a more exciting story than me. I used to just watch a lot of TV, you know, and play old phonograph records, reminisce, and sometimes I'd read a book. Nothing very heavy, just some condensed version in the Reader's Digest. And I'm kind of an observer of life. I just watched you live, you know. I didn't participate in it, I just watched you. A lot of people in AA nowadays have dual problems. They're alcoholics and drug addicts, and they're alcoholics and overeaters, they're alcoholics and this, and alcoholics and that. I'm an alcoholic and a procrastinator. I always figure if a thing's worth doing, it's worth waiting until tomorrow to even consider doing. As a result, I just postponed 30 years of drinking. I postponed 30 years of living, I mean. You see what happened to me, I'm sure, is I'm positive of one thing. That when I was served that drink at that bar when I was 18 years old, that's when my emotional growth stopped right then and there. And I dealt with life for the next 25 or 30 years. I dealt with life with an 18-year-old set of emotions. And no wonder I was a rotten husband. No wonder I was a rotten father. You know, it's okay to deal with life with an 18-year-old set of emotions if you're 18. Or even up to 21 or 25 or something. But when you start getting in your 40s, why, then it gets to be a drag to those around you. If it didn't happen during those years when I was about 18 years old, it wasn't any good. And I couldn't accept anything new that came along. So I had a difficult time in life. So my wife and I used to fight a lot. And she didn't like my drinking for some reason. It used to irritate her. She'd come home from work and see that I was intoxicated, and she'd kick me out of the house. It never occurred to me to say, wait a minute, you can't kick me out of my own house. I'm making a payment here. What do you mean, kick me out? You can't kick me out. No, I just had no self-worth at all. She said, leave. I just left. I packed my matching Albertson's shopping bags and split, you know. I'd never get very far from home, though. I'd work my way back in. I was in and out, back and forth. She divorced me three times. And the last time she divorced me, I wound up in Hermosa Beach, California. It's a little beach city there. I rented this little garage place that they had made some living quarters. I figured this has got to be great. It's only a half a block to the water. I'm going to get up in the morning. I'll run 5 miles along the ocean edge every morning. Then I'll dive in the water and I'll ride a few waves in. I'll really feel good. And then I'll go to work and I'll be able to really produce and do a good job. As far as I know, the water was down there. I never really got around to checking it out. Of course, I'm sure it was, though. I used to smell the ocean breezes every now and then. I only lived there 4 years. What do you expect? What I actually used to do is wake up late. It'd be 10 o'clock, 10:30 in the morning. I'm already an hour late to work. Oh, man. I'd throw my clothes on, get in that car, and weave in and out of traffic. I had to get there. You see, I should have worked yesterday. I left all these papers all over everything. And if the boss were to find some of those papers, he'd get excited. Actually, what I would do is I was racing the boss to my desk, because I knew if he found some of those papers, they were months old. Some of them were months old. I should have completed them months ago, and I hadn't. And they were too old to turn in. If I turned them in, I'd be fired for holding them so long. If I did turn them in, I'd be fired. You know, I knew it was going to happen today. And I'd get to work and check everything out, and everything's the same as yesterday. Saved again. Go back and get a cup of coffee in the coffee room and come back and sit at my desk and shuffle papers and make excuses to my customers. And at a respectable time, I'd go to the bar that was conveniently located right next door to where I worked. And they sold martinis over there, and I like martinis. And they sold double martinis during the lunch hour for $1. The regular martinis were 75 cents. I figured, hell, you're going to have two anyhow. Who ever heard of having one martini? You're going to have two anyway. You might as well order the dollar one, and you'll save 50 cents. God knows you need the money bad. And I'd order the dollar one. And I'd get to sipping on it and I'd kind of compare my drink to the guy sitting next to me, and you'd have a 75 cent. And I'd say to myself, who the hell do they think they're kidding? This is no double. It's a little larger than the 75 center, that's all. So I better have another one. And then I'd have another one. Then I'd have another one. And I'd call the office and tell them, I forgot to tell you, I'm going on a lot of calls this afternoon. Take messages. I'll be back tomorrow morning, 9 o'clock. And I'd head towards the beach and stop and buy the cheapest bottle of vodka I could find. Whatever was on sale that day is what I bought. And I'd get home about 2 or 2:30 in the afternoon. And I'd change into my pajamas. And I'd sit on the edge of the bed, untap that cheap vodka, and I'd take a big, big jolt out of it, several swallows. And I'd say to myself, well, you've done it again today. This cannot continue. You know, you're not the only guy that's ever been divorced. You're not the only guy that's ever been in debt. Why the hell don't you do something about it? All you do is sit around and talk about stuff. You never take any action on anything. Then I'd put one of those old 78 records on the turntable. Something like Billy Eckstein singing, Who Can I Turn To? And then I'd go into my fantasy, you know. Starting tomorrow morning, it's all going to be different. Starting tomorrow morning, I'm going to get up at 6 o'clock. I'm going to get down to that damn office by 7. I'm going to knock out paperwork for a couple of hours. When that phone starts ringing tomorrow, I'm going to be ready to do business. Starting tomorrow, a whole new life starts. Starting tomorrow, I'm going to mark it right on my calendar, big X. Starting tomorrow morning, I'm going to work for 365 days in a row. I'm not going to take a day off. I'm not going to drink for the next year. Starting tomorrow, it's all business. Starting tomorrow, I'm going to get caught up once and for all. I'm tired of living like this. I can't do anything about that marriage, but at least I can get caught up financially. Wow, what a great idea. God, sometimes I surprise myself when I have such wonderful ideas. I don't know about you, but when I have a great idea like that, I got to cause to celebrate, so I have another drink. And then I have another one, then I have another one, you know. And then I plan what I'm going to do, because I'm going to triple my income. I'll be out of debt in no time. And what I'm going to do with all the money. Then I'd look up at the clock. It's 10 minutes to 11. My God, it can't be 10 minutes to 11. I just sat down here on the edge of this bed, you know. And I'd call the operator. 10 minutes to 11. My Jesus. And then I realized I was almost out of food. So I'd throw my clothes on over my pajamas, and I'd run 2 blocks to the liquor store. I'd close at 11. I had to get there by 11. That's when I first started jogging about that time. I had to get there, you know. Get the guy just as he was closing up. Bottle of Smirnoff. Always bought the better brands right around where I lived. I wouldn't want him to think I was cheap right there in the neighborhood, you know. And I could stroll back to my shack with peace and contentment and security for the rest of the night. And I'd get back there and fantasize a little more, play some more of those old records, and start rehearsing the speech I was going to give, because I knew I was going to be salesman of the year. And somewhere in there, I'd pass out. I'd wake up the next morning, it'd be 10 o'clock. Maury and I are late to work. Oh, man. And I'd throw my clothes on, get in that car, and weave in and out of traffic. I had to get there. I'd race my boss to the desk. And I'd beat him. And, oh, man, you know, I'd go get a cup of coffee, go back to my desk and shuffle papers and make excuses. And at a respectable time, I'd go to the bar that was conveniently located right next door to where I worked. I'd go over there and make my big decision of the day. Whether they have the dollar one or the 75 cents. Then I'd have another one, then I'd have another one, then I'd have another one, and call them and tell them I forgot to tell you I'm going a lot of calls, take messages, I'll be back tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock, head towards the beach and stop and buy the cheapest bottle of vodka I could find, get home about 2 or 2:30 and put my pajamas on, sit on the edge of the bed, untap that cheap vodka, take a big, big jolt out of it, several swallows. And I'd say to myself, well, done it again today. Yeah. This cannot continue. You know, you're not the only guy that's ever been divorced. You're not the only guy that's ever been in debt. Why the hell don't you do something about it? All you do is sit around and talk about stuff. You never take any action on anything. And I'd put one of those old records on the turntable. Something like Billy Eckstein singing, Who Can I Turn To? Then I'd go into my family. And starting tomorrow morning, it's all going to be different. Starting tomorrow morning, I'm going to get up at 6 o'clock. I'll get down to that damn office by 7, knock out paperwork for a couple hours. When my phone starts ringing tomorrow, I'm going to be ready to do business. Starting tomorrow, a whole new life starts. I'm going to mark it on my calendar. I'm going to work for 365 days in a row without taking a day off. I'm going to get squared away financially once and for all. I'm not even going to drink for the rest of this year. Maybe I'll go to a New Year's Eve party. Have a couple, but outside of that, I'm going to go for 365 days in a row. I didn't do that once or twice. I did that hundreds of times. And I managed to keep my job. I don't know how, really. The only reason I kept my job is that was my last little bit of respectability that I had left. Is my name on a I worked for a large company, and they put my name on one of their business cards, and that's who I was. And that's all I had. If they took that card away from me, I'd be nothing. And because I had drank away my wife, my kids, my house, everything else. And so I hung on that job, and I managed, so I worked for them drunk and sober. I managed to put in 25 years with that company, recently retired out of there before they found me out. But about that time, my wife and son moved in with me. You know how that is. One day she came down there, and we got to talking. One thing led to another, and we admitted that we were miserable people, but we seemed to be more miserable apart than we were together. So why don't we try this thing one more time? And she started promising me stuff, and I'd start promising her, and she promised me, and I promised. We spent the whole afternoon promising wonderful things to each other. I'm sure we knew we couldn't fulfill those promises, but we really had a good time that Sunday. And one of the things she promised me was that she wouldn't fight me on my drinking anymore. In fact, she'd join me. I should have been suspicious, but I wasn't. Because, see, she never drank while I was married to her. And little did I know that she had started drinking during that 2 or 3 year period that we were apart, and she became an alcoholic immediately. She was an alcoholic from drink one. And that, it turned out, the reason she didn't drink before, she was always afraid to drink. Because she knew her father was an alcoholic, and she was always afraid to drink because she knew she'd be one too. And she was right. My case, I drank for a long time. Booze was a social lubricant for me. It enabled me to dance and romance and do all the things that normal people seem to be able to do. I needed a few drinks just to get started. And I was all right once I got going, but I needed a few drinks. And it enabled me to be social. So it was my friend. With my friend for a long, long time. I had a wonderful time drinking. Sometimes I hear people say from the podium, how they hated booze and all that, and they drank for 25, 30 years. I wonder, why in the hell did they drink if they hated it? It was wonderful. I'd still be drinking if I thought I'd get away with it, because it was instant serenity. I'd take one drink and I was fine. But anyway, I crossed that so-called invisible line into alcoholism. I can't tell you exactly when, but 10 years down the road, maybe 20, I don't know. All I know is I became an alcoholic. became allergic to it. Same thing happened to me with penicillin. I took penicillin several times, did the job it was supposed to do. It always worked. Last time I took penicillin, I wound up in the hospital for 8 days. I almost died. The doctor told me, whatever you do, don't ever take penicillin again. And I said, what are you talking about? It always worked before. And he says, well, you've become allergic to it. And he says, and I can't promise you that if you ever take another shot of penicillin that you won't die. Said, no kidding. Jeez, I promise. And I'm proud to stand up here this afternoon and inform you people that I got about 32 and a half years off of that stuff. I haven't had to go to one meeting about it. You know. I haven't had to get a sponsor or anything. I don't even know if they've got Penicillin Anonymous. They probably do. They got every other kind of an anonymous. And it hadn't been necessary for me to call anybody up at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning and say I've got this uncontrollable desire to take a shot of penicillin. I just quit cold turkey, and it hadn't been necessary for me to have a shot of that stuff since. It turns out that the allergy to penicillin and the allergy to alcohol is just a little bit different. You know, I just never, ever have had a craving for a shot of penicillin. And, nevertheless, I'm allergic to alcohol. But I didn't know it. Our life was really, after she started drinking, things got really bad then. They weren't all that good before that. But once she started drinking, it was bad. And we just could not drink together. You know, some people should not drink. She was one of them. She was just not a social person when she drank. Because as soon as she took one drink, all the pent-up emotions and hostilities of a lifetime would come out in that first drink as she was blacking out. And she used to do bad things to me. I'm not going to tell you all the things that she did. I'll share a few. It'll help you understand my case a little better. She did stuff like throw the Christmas tree lights and all out the back door. She used to break my old 78 records if she saw they played them more than once. But the 10th time, she couldn't handle it anymore. She just, ding, you know. She'd break them. Don't break that record. It's a collector item. You know. Can't replace it. Good, I'll never have to hear that day. I get hung up on music. I love to drink and listen to music. And sometimes I get hung up on a trumpet tooth. You know, on these records. I lay that needle in there. Toot. Oh, man. Lay it in there. Toot. Oh, man. It's a driver crazy. You know. She walked over the phonograph one night and just bent the arm up. I don't know where she got her strength from. Next morning, I got a pipe wrench and hammer and pliers down to try to straighten that thing out. I couldn't straighten it out. You know, Jesus, it's a metal arm. I don't know how she did that. But that's where we lived, and it was rough. And I used to stand there as she was destroying the place, and I'd say, don't do that. Oh, honey, don't. And it never occurred to me that. I finally asked her. I said, you know, I allowed you to kick me out of all those other places, but this isn't working out. You divorced me, remember? We're not even married. What the hell are you doing here? You know. So I allowed you to kick me out of those other houses, but I moved here first, therefore you go this time. And I'm going to go to my brother's house and stay all night with him. And when I come back tomorrow morning, I expect you to be gone. That's more time than you ever gave me. And so I went to my brother's house and drank with him all night. Sat up and philosophized about the world in general. And while I was gone, she decided to commit suicide, which was no big deal. She always used to commit suicide. She was suicidal. She was suicidal right into AA. She had about 8 months of sobriety, and something bad happened. I don't know what it was. She could never remember later, but it was bad. We know that because she was going to commit suicide, for God's sake. Then she remembered she couldn't because she was the cookie lady at the meeting that night. You know, sometimes you wonder why they give some of us flake some of the jobs they give us around here, you know. Well, hell, they're life-saving jobs. That's why. Her sponsor finally got to her and told her, you know, you better knock that crap off. One of these days, you're going to hurt yourself real bad. And but that night, she decided to commit suicide before I came home. And she went in a blackout. She went into the closet, though, first, where my clothes were hanging, and just took a knife and slashed every bit of clothes I owned, just ripped everything to pieces, cut the tent legs off my pants, cut up my shirts and ties and all that kind of stuff. There's a lady nodding out there. She probably did it, too. Went into my dresser drawer and even cut up my shorts. Took a knife and stabbed my damn shoes. Just made a complete shambles out of everything. And she threw that stuff all over the place. And she threw phonograph records and pictures and lamps and just destroyed that place. And then she turned the gas on, the kitchen oven, and went to bed in the little place we lived in. You know, she tried to put the rags that she had made and put them around the doors and the windows, try to make the place airtight. Turned the gas on, the kitchen oven, and went to bed. The next morning, she woke up. You know, nothing happened. That old place we lived in was a half a block from the water, and a wind used to whistle through those boards. You could have turned the gas on 10 ovens and never smelled it in there. She survived one more time, only this time was different. She looked around. She knew she had been the only person there that night, and she looked around at that destruction that she had done, you know. And she didn't remember doing any of it, and yet she knew she had done it. She just couldn't believe what she had done. And then I came home, and I had trouble believing it myself. And then our son came home, and he thought we were moving again. And we had hit bottom, and that was our bottom. You know, I'm from a good family. She was from a good family. When we got married, we were going to do a lot of wonderful things together. We had great plans what we were going to do in the future and how we were going to wind up. We were going to live the good life. But all we had managed to do is sit around and slowly drink every bit of goodness out of our lives. And from then on, it was bad. From then on, it was terrible. It wasn't all that good before that, but it got worse. This is the part of the story where most people say, and you hit bottom, so I call AA. Some nice guy came out and took me to a meeting. Everything's just been wonderful ever since, you know. Not me. I didn't know enough to do that. I just kept on drinking. But we had gone to group therapy just a little bit prior to that. And the therapist had asked me, "Do you really drink as much as she says?" I said, "Hell yes, I do. I drink a lot. Who wouldn't marry to a woman like that? I've got two of the worst children you could possibly imagine. I got this pressure job. My God, the pressure on that job alone would make a person drink. But what's the big deal? So I drink. They've never missed a meal. They've always had a decent place to stay. They've always had clothes. They've always had medical attention. They've always had whatever they needed. Braces on their teeth, whatever. You know. So I drink. So what? I'm not hurting anybody with my drinking. Maybe myself a little bit, but it's worth it. It's the tab I gotta pay because I need to drink to relieve the pressure. He said, "Have you ever thought of quitting?" As a matter of fact, I have. Thought about, you know, I did. I thought about it every night. Starting tomorrow, I'm not going to quit today, tonight, but I'm going to quit starting tomorrow. And he said, "Have you ever thought of AA? And I said, "Thanks, but no thanks. I've already been to AA. And I had gone to a meeting one time. It was one of these meetings where they pass out chips for various lengths of sobriety. I don't know if you do that here or not, but the leader that night said, "Has anyone just finished their first 30 days of sobriety? If so, come up and get a chip." Here comes this guy up. Got his chip. "My name's Joe Blow. I'm an alcoholic. I'm really proud to get this 30-day chip. I know this is a spiritual program that I found God when I walked through the doors of AA. It's the lights in the eyes of the people that just turn me on and keep me coming back to these meetings. And I just love every single person here. Just before I came to the meeting tonight, I got a call from my employer, and he's made me general manager down at the plant. Just a wonderful, glorious way of life. And for all you newcomers, keep coming back. We love you. And I thought, yeah. Anybody else? Here comes this lady up. My name's Mary Smith, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm really proud to get this chip. And I know this is a spiritual program that I found God when I walked through the doors of AA. The lights and the eyes of the people that just turned me on and keep me coming back to these meetings. I just love every single person here. Hate is no longer a word in my vocabulary. I love everybody. Not just the people in AA, but everywhere. All over the world, I love everybody. Just a short time ago, my children were failing in school. Now we're getting letters from all the major universities throughout the United States offering free scholarships. It's a wonderful, glorious way of life. I wake up in the morning, and I reach over and I grab the hand of God, and I walk through the day hand in hand with God. Wonderful, glorious way of life we have here. 12 wonderful steps for all you newcomers. Keep coming back. We love you. Oh, man. I never went back, I'll tell you that. I could hardly wait to get the hell out of there. I needed a drink, and I needed it bad. And I got one immediately, too, I'll tell you that. And, so this guy suggested AA, and I said, forget it. I've already been there, some kind of a spiritual thing, a religious cult of something, some kind. It's okay for them, it's just not for me. So, through a doctor advised me to go to AA, too, and he said that that was the only thing that saved his wife. His wife was an alcoholic, and they had tried everything known to medical science for her. They had tried rest homes and sanitariums and treatment centers and all psychiatry and antabuse, the whole thing. They tried everything with her. Nothing worked for her. It worked temporarily. You know, she'd be sober for 30 days while she's in the treatment center. As soon as she gets out, she's drunk again. But she's got 7 months in AA, and that's what he recommended that I do, go to AA and maintain your sobriety. And so I just shrugged that one off. But my wife had been with me and heard all that stuff, and she went back to that doctor, and the doctor said, why don't you go to some meetings with my wife? She'd be happy to take you. And so that's what happened. That's how I happened to be here today, is because I tagged along. She went to meetings, and every once in a while I'd go with her. And I had a rotten attitude about the whole thing. I couldn't believe that she was going to AA. For God's sake, she didn't drink all that much, you know. I agreed that she shouldn't drink, but, you know, hell, if anybody should be going, it should be me, and I sure don't need it. You know? So I thought it was ridiculous that she was going. But I went just every now and then just to be a good guy. And I had a lousy attitude, and I refused to listen. My God. And I'd be damned if I didn't get the message anyhow. It just doesn't seem to make any difference, you know. And, you know, it in my case, it isn't anything anybody said. I know that now. I just kind of absorbed it. I just got sober one day, that's all. And I got sober thousands of times. I don't know why I stayed sober this time. But, everybody gets sober. That's no big deal. Staying sober. That's the trick, you know. I stayed sober two or three days, or two or three weeks, and I realized what had happened, and I couldn't drink anymore, that I had quit drinking. And then anger set in. I had just completed about 25, 30 years of drinking, and anger set in. I had this rotten wife. Two of the worst kids you could possibly imagine. Pressure jobs. I owe money to everybody. It's all past due. I don't mean past due last week. I mean past due. And I've got all this pressure on me. And now I can't even drink. What the hell am I going to do with the rest of my life? Nothing. That's what I'm going to do. Absolutely nothing. There's nothing to do if you're like me, you know. There's nothing to do if you don't drink. I have to drink. My life is over if I can't drink. And never be able to go to a nice restaurant ever. You know, you can't go to a nice, you can't go anyplace where they serve booze, you know. So I'm stuck at Denny's for the rest of my life. Although I was in a Denny's the other night, and they served beer and wine in the one I went to. So I'm, but you can't go to a nice restaurant. If you go to a nice restaurant, what is it they want to know? The first thing you walk in there, what do they want to know? They want to know, would you like a cocktail before dinner? And you can't say to them, well, yeah, I'd like one, but you see, I've got this disease. And it's of a twofold nature. It's an allergy of the body coupled with an obsession of the mind. If I take even one drink, I can't predict my behavior. If it wasn't for that, I'd sure have one, huh? I used to think you had to explain all that stuff to people. You know. I used to spend 90% of my day back then explaining things to people. If I was standing on a street corner and somebody walked up, I'd start explaining what I was doing there. I had no self-worth back in those days at all. And I had explained just what little bit of space I was taking up in this world. And that's one of the things I'm trying to do now, to quit explaining. It's hard. It's hard not to explain. But I'm trying. I'm working on it. But every once in a while, I catch myself explaining something to somebody. And I always start from the day I was born when I start explaining. Bring them up to date and all the ramifications, and pros and cons, and both sides of the story and all that. And then I catch myself sometimes, you know, with what I'm doing. But I stop right in mid-explanation. You know, the sad part of this whole thing is they never notice the difference. It turns out no one's listening to your explanations. No one wants to know why you haven't done something you were supposed to do in the first place. And I'm trying to quit altogether, but it's hard. And I've done, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous is not all fun and games, but it is a lot of fun, and there are a lot of games, and I enjoy being sober, you know, but there's some hard parts to it, too. I'm very glad that I got a sponsor when I did. I had about 4 or 5 months of sobriety when I got a sponsor. I was miserable in my sobriety up until that time. And I couldn't take the third step. I just didn't, you know, I couldn't surrender. And I was sober, but I didn't really understand why I was and how come I didn't drink. I don't know. I was just in limbo there for a while. But I got a sponsor, and that's when my AA life really started. And I got a tough sponsor. You know, if you get a good sponsor, he or she is going to insist that you work the steps. And that's what my sponsor did. He insisted I work the steps, and I worked them. And he helped me maintain my sobriety while I did. And I'm very grateful to him. And because, you see, you never know when the chips are going to come down. Because being sober, while it's wonderful most of the time, it's life. It's what it is. Being sober is life. I never lived life at all until I got sober. Every time I ever had a feeling in my life, I drank immediately, good or bad. I don't want anything to do with feelings. And when you're sober, you got to feel all this stuff happening to you. You know, it's life. That's what life is. And life hurts sometimes. And but if you have the steps like I do, I have the steps in my background now. And I can cope with stuff. Not always good. You don't have to look good coping. You just cope, that's all. I mean, there's nothing said you have to look classy doing it, you know. I managed to cope now for a little over 19 years. And I'm very, very grateful for that because a lot of things happened. And my wife got sick with cancer, and she was sick for 5 years. That was a very trying period for me, and for her too, of course. But I was able to be of some help to her. The day I found out that she had cancer, I went to a meeting that night. That's what I've been taught to do when you're in trouble, when you've got problems. Go to a meeting. Don't stay away from the meeting. That's what I've been told. And so I went to my meeting, regular meeting that night. And that night they read. Sometimes they do. I don't know if they do it here, but in Southern California, sometimes they read a vision for you. It's in the last part of the vision for you. And they say in there, ask in your morning meditation what you can do for the alcoholic who still suffers. Obviously, you cannot. can't ever quote it right, but I can't help anyone unless your own house is in order. And I thought that had a big impact on me that night. You know, because I was always wondering, have I really worked these steps right? Am I really working? Am I a good AA? I don't know. But when I heard that, you know, obviously you can't help someone unless your own house is in order. I thought, by God, that's right. And my house is in order. Our house was in order. We were up to date. Everything that needed to be said had long been said. We were current in our relationship. And I was current with all my bills. I was current in everything. I was current down at work. If anybody asked me, Hank, what have you gotten out of AA outside of your sobriety, of course, what is it? And I would tell them. I got caught up finally. I was always dealing from way back. If I was on vacation, I should have been at work. If I was at work, I was thinking about vacation. If anybody asked me to do anything, I couldn't do it because I had about 15 things I should have done first. And I was always working from behind, and AA has made me current. And I'm current in all my affairs. And I was able to be of some assistance to my wife. I was responsible by then, you know, and dependable and all that. And so when she died, it was a terrible thing. But I'm not guilty today. I can stand up here today and say, you know, I don't have to think, oh, geez, if I should have done this, I should have done that. If only I would have said that. If only I don't have to think. I don't have to do that because I did it and I said it and everything was okay. And so when she died, now I've got a problem. Only problem I've got here, I've got two things I can do. I can mope around and, people can feel sorry for me because my wife died. What a shame. You know, she had 16 years of sobriety and she worked with a lot of women. And we had an AA marriage and we had some good years in sobriety. And what a shame, you know. And or I can choose to live. And I've chosen to live. And I'm having the time of my life. I've decided I'm going to have the best time I can possibly have with the rest of my life. And one day at a time. And stay current, you know, and that's what I'm doing. And that's how I live today. And I haven't got time to go into a lot more, but I want to say that I've met a lot of wonderful things. I've met a lot of wonderful people in AA. All the people that I wanted to meet, you know, out there in those bars. They've all sobered up, and they're all here in AA. And, God, I've met exciting people, you know. And I bet, you know, I thought I wouldn't trade places with any of them today. 19 years ago, I'd have traded with anybody. But not today. I'd prefer to be who I am today. And that's a wonderful thing to happen to a person. My son used to look at me real funny back in those days. Part of the reason he was looking at me so funny was that he was stoned out of his gourd. And I'll be damned if he didn't turn himself into AA when he was 21 years old. And last May the 27th, I watched him take a 15-year cake. And he's got 15 years and a half years sobriety now. Young guy. And my grandson, my daughter's son, is 22. On February the 4th of this year, he took a 4-year cake. And the three of us are sober in AA. And every Wednesday night, we go to the Pacific Group in Los Angeles, which is the largest group in the whole world. And we celebrate our sobriety together every Wednesday night. And it's really pretty special. My daughter and my daughter-in-law both send you greetings from Al-Anon. And we're an AA family. And we weren't any kind of a family 19 years ago. But we're still not the best family on the block. I wouldn't try to kid anybody here in AA. But we've all got this program to work if we choose to work. And my children, thank God, are self-supporting through their own contributions. And they learned that on the program, not from me, that's for sure. I was a dependent type of person. If you had it, I'd take it from you rather than earn it myself. And they're autonomous. And we're not emotionally bound either, you know. And so we're able to live our own lives, and sometimes we intertwine and sometimes get a little mixed up. All in all, we are able to stand on our own feet and be self-sufficient. So I'm very, very grateful. About the only thing now I can say as far as wisdom is what I heard that first meeting that I went attended, and that is, this really does turn out to be a spiritual program. You know, I know that I found God when I walked through the doors of AA. And it's the lights in the eyes of the people that turn me on and keep me coming back. Thank you very much.